Senator, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning to both of you.
Tim here with Ed. There's actually four of us, but you don't have to remember but Tim and Ed if you don't. Walker and Fred are here with us. Hey, how long have you been in the United States Senate?
I've been here 2.5 years.
You replaced Tom Coburn?
There is no replacement for Tom Coburn, oh. But I did follow after.
That is a good answer.
Okay. How did you vote on the skinny repeal of Obamacare?
I voted for the skinny repeal. In fact, we had three different versions that came up, and I voted for all three of those. I would take anything as better than what we're dealing with today and to be able to move it to the next step. Really what needs to happen is the House and the Senate need to be able to work on the conference committee and get it done. The skinny version was a way to be able to get us to conference and be able to get to a final bill.
Were you surprised that Senator McCain gave the big thumbs down?
I was, actually. We had obviously three senators. Any one of those three, if they would have voted with the rest of the Republicans in our conference, would have moved that on to conference. We just needed one more vote, but we had three Republicans, including Senator McCain. It was disappointing because there are so many people in my state that have been harmed by Obamacare that it's been very, very difficult to be able to face them and say, I have fought this for years. I will continue to fight it. We can't stop because of the negative effects they face. I was on the floor just the day before the vote reading out some of the emails that I've received recently. One of them saying that their insurance now has gone to $42,000 a year. And they're saying, basically, there's no way I can pay that much for health care insurance. Mm-hmm. It was never like this before Obamacare passed. Now the rates are so high that I can't pay it anymore, and I'm stuck. I want to have insurance, but I can't have insurance because I can't afford it. That is the story over and over and over again in middle-class America.
I'm Tim Wildman, and you're listening to American Family Radio. Our guest from Washington, D.C. is Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. I think, I don't mean to be too pessimistic here, Senator, but I think we're on the path to single-payer universal health insurance in America in the next 5 years. I know you're revolted by that idea, and I don't like it either, but I just think that's where we're headed with the cost going up so much and no, seemingly no answer that can be passed in the Congress to address these problems. As the Congress is now, I think more people are going to say, hey, I can't afford it, and I'd rather have everybody covered. And that seems attractive to people until they see the downside, and you can't experience the downside until you have it.
It's not hard to be able to see that, even from the recent news on it, watching Charlie Gard slowly die in the U.K., as the British government and their socialized medicine says, no, we can't afford this, and we're not even going to allow you to travel out of the country to be able to go get health care because we can't afford the consequences when they come back in. So, no, we're not going to do this because we're the government, and we choose what happens to children, not parents. We in America were appalled by that. In England, it's just another day of socialized medicine. In Oklahoma City, there's one of the hospitals in Oklahoma City that's a turnkey hospital that their prices are posted online. 25% of their clients are Canadians that are tired of waiting for socialized medicine in Canada. They actually fly to Oklahoma, they get their health care done there, and then they fly back so they can actually get it done in a timely manner. That's socialized medicine. It's the other side of it that we as Americans don't understand, but the rest of the world does.
Talking to Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, Republican, and he joins us from our nation's capital. Senator, we have gone on record as opposing the 60-vote threshold in the Senate to pass legislation, which is a Senate rule that's a so-called filibuster, which goes back, how long does that go back, 100 years or so?
Well, the filibuster in some type goes back to the very beginning, but the current rule setting is about 60 years old, and then it goes back to another version that actually would have been 67, and that goes back over 100 years.
Now, you're in favor of maintaining the filibuster 60-vote threshold, true?
Well, I'm kind of a mix on this, as odd as it sounds. Most y'all know, but most people probably don't know, every bill actually has two votes of 60 before you get to a final passage of 51. There's a vote called the motion to proceed. That means to get on it, you have to have 60 votes. Then you debate it, and then to stop debating, you have to have another vote of 60, and then you actually pass it with 51 votes. I have proposed and will continue to propose, in fact, we'll have an op-ed out in the next 24 hours, a national one, to be able to talk about taking away the first 60-vote threshold to basically say the majority should be able to get on any bill they want to get on. You get on the bill, you debate it, you amend it. If the minority party doesn't believe we've had enough debate, they can keep debate going, but at least you can get on a bill. Right now, we can't even debate issues because you have to have 60 votes to be able to get onto it and even to start debate. I believe that once you start debate, once you get going on a bill, it's very difficult to be able to stop it. But if you needed to be able to stop it, if it was really dramatic and was a problem, the minority could. The philosophical issue is there's only one place in all the federal government where the minority voice is always heard, and that's the Senate. In the White House, it's not heard. In the House of Representatives and the Supreme Court, the minority voice is not heard. But it forces majority and minority to be able to debate it out in the Senate. That was the design of the Senate from the beginning and was not a bad idea. The implementation of it right now, though, is terrible.
Yeah. Well, do you see, I don't see anything getting passed in the Senate. You know better than I do. I don't see anything getting passed in the Senate of any consequence as long as Chuck Schumer and the Democrats have 8 votes margin. Can you tell me what you see getting accomplished in the next 6 months or a year?
Well, that is the great unknown. We'll see. But you're right. The minority always has the ability to be able to stop it. My concern is that if the majority cannot get onto a bill and even debate it, then it's easy just to be able to brush everything aside.
Okay.
But if we get on a bill and we start debating it, and the national conversation starts up about that bill, it is much better to actually get on the bill, debate it, and keep going from there. I've had a lot of folks say if we just drop this to 51, it solves everything. It doesn't solve everything. Quite frankly, Republicans just showed that we were one vote short of being able to get on the biggest piece of legislation we'll deal with all year, and that's the health care bill. We couldn't even come up with 51 at that one, even though we have 52 Republicans. So just having simple majority doesn't even solve all the problems that we face. 49 Republicans were on board, and I've had lots of folks that have said, how come Republicans couldn't get this done? 49 of us were solid on this. We just had 3 that were not. And that's the dynamics of those individuals from those states representing their states and their point of view. But there are a lot of Republicans that were rock solid working on this all the time and spent a lot of time and work to get us to this moment. So I'm still a proponent to say, though, we should have a place where there is a national debate where both sides and both points of view are heard. The Senate is the best place to do that. But the only way you can actually do it is actually start debate and get on the bill.
Senator, you mentioned focusing public attention on a particular bill to kind of push their senators along to actually end debate and vote. One of my favorite movies of all time, it's a little corny now, but Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Before the rule was changed, I think in the mid-70s, for there to be a filibuster, you actually had to hold up the Senate by talking for 24 hours. And it seems to me, this is my opinion, it seems to me we should go back to that. Because now what is done is, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Democrats can simply say, well, we're filibustering and we will move. So we're basically tabling this bill. It's not going to come to any kind of significant resolution. We're going to go on to do something else. And if you were forced to make a public spectacle and you were forced to stand up and hold up the business of the Senate and actually talk for 24 hours or however long you could last, that would truly bring public attention to the issue you wanted to raise. So you would have the minority having their voice. They would reach the American people, but you wouldn't hold the Senate hostage. And I think, in my opinion, the change that was made in 75 now does that. You can have 8 senators hold up not only the U.S. Senate, but the entire government, because what the House has passed, 200 and something bills that are now held up by the Senate, nothing's getting done. Where am I wrong, Senator?
Nope, you're exactly right, and that is exactly my proposal. The issue is right now Democrats can keep us from actually debating it, keep us from ever getting to the floor on an issue just by saying we're not going to give you enough votes and enough support to actually get onto the bill. The Mr. Smith Goes to Washington moment is this big moment to be able to hold up debate to keep it from closing and to be able to occupy the floor. That is exactly what I'm proposing, is to say the majority gets on the bill, they start debate, they keep going. If the minority feels like they haven't been heard, they've got to get to the floor and they've got to actually hold things up on the floor to be able to dominate that. But otherwise, we move on to final passage.
Senator, we got about 2 minutes left here. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, nice enough to join us for this segment of the program here on American Family Radio, heard on many stations throughout the great state of Oklahoma. Senator, Planned Parenthood is the number one provider of abortions in America. They get $500 million from the federal government annually. The pro-life community has been trying to get that stopped. I know you're very pro-life. What are the chances of defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, we've got two aspects of this. One of them we already did defund earlier this year. The Obama administration created a policy where every state had to take Planned Parenthood money in a certain way. It was called a family planning money, had to include Planned Parenthood. My state, other states all said, yes, we'll do family planning money to be able to help, but not Planned Parenthood, because that's really abortion. As we like to tell people, abortion is not health care. That's taking a life, not protecting a life. So that's very different. So the Obama administration kicked that out. We actually turned that back around, allowing every state to be able to determine how their health care dollars are done. So that is done. That's passed. That's on the president's desk, already been signed, already policy. So that's win number one. Win number two for us was to hope to be able to kick out all the Medicaid dollars that goes to Planned Parenthood for what they say is screenings and other things, but it's basically just a setup to be able to get towards abortions. That we had hoped to have in the health care bill. Obviously, that failed, and some of the folks that voted against it voted against the bill specifically because they did not want Planned Parenthood to be defunded. So, again, the vast majority, 49 of the 51, do want to be able to defund Planned Parenthood, but we've still got three that don't, and so that's its own challenge as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll work through that together, but quite frankly, it's one of those issues that when I set it side by side and say, tell me what's health care and what's not health care, taking life is not health care. Protecting life is.
Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. Appreciate it, Senator. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Thanks for what you're doing.
Okay, bye-bye.